Welcome to the PreparedX Podcast, your complete source for crisis, emergency, business continuity, and security preparedness interviews, news, and much more. Now, your host, he creates chaos for a living, Rob Burton.
Hello, and welcome to episode 41 of the PreparedX Podcast. And in this one, I interview James DeMeo, who is an expert in venue and event security preparedness. This is really timely, this podcast interview, based on what happened recently in Las Vegas, but also what's happening in other parts of the world with regards to confined space and people being protected and in those spaces. So it was a good interview. Obviously, 58 people died in Las Vegas, and more than 500 were injured at the Harvest Festival. James, you know, touched on the importance of the planning and the training of staff for these venues. You know, we got into the temporary staff that come along. You have volunteer staff, so there's challenges around those, you know, those individuals, getting them up to speed, making sure that they have background checks. A lot of great information all around with regards to this topic. So this one you'll found really interesting, episode 41, and my interview with James DeMeo. Good afternoon, James. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Thanks for joining us. Just before we get going, could you introduce yourself for our audience, please, and just talk for a few minutes about your career?
Sure, Rob. Thank you for the opportunity. My name is James A. DeMeo. I'm the founder, president, and CEO of USESC, based in Raleigh, North Carolina. 27 years in the security industry, 21 of which I was a member of the Nassau County Police Department on Long Island, New York. I had the good fortune of earning a master's degree in sport management from Adelphi University. And since 2011, I've been focusing on confined space protection for stadiums, venues, and arenas.
Perfect. And we've got some questions for you with regards to that very topic. So again, thanks for joining us. I guess as we get started here, James, with respect to, you know, overall emergency preparedness for large sporting or entertainment events, you know, what would you say, you know, is the biggest single challenge for those organizers of those events? And I'm sure, you know, you probably have a laundry list of challenges for them. But what one stands out to you based on your experience?
Well, Rob, it's a terrific question, a timely question in light of what's coming out of Las Vegas in terms of safeguarding today's stadiums, venues, and arenas.
Sure.
Certainly, the challenges are numerous within the space, ranging from drones and IEDs to, you know, active shooters, workplace violence scenarios, inclement severe weather conditions. But certainly, the one that really comes to mind, obviously, is, you know, the impact of the potential of terrorism within the space, whether that be the lone wolf, which we pretty much saw coming out of Las Vegas, domestic, as well as international threats for densely populated areas. So, you know, as a security leader, it's my approach is more of one that is not fear-based, but it's to educate the fans, to increase the level of training for venue staff, and to make sure that everyone has a safe event, but at the same time, the fans are situationally aware of what's going on around them at all times.
Yeah, I think it's everybody's responsibility, right?
Absolutely. And you know, one of the things that I really prided myself on is getting the message out as let's say if you're an employee of a venue, is that you don't particularly work in one silo. I mean, duty of care responsibilities, those entrusted with duty of care within the confined space, everyone has that obligation to share information, to pay attention to what's going on around them. So, for instance, if you're working in the box office or, you know, in event security or operations or conversion crew or even in upper management, you know, sharing that information, being a team leader, having those, you know, conversations with law enforcement, everybody on the same page in the interest of public safety is part and parcel for a safe and secure sporting experience.
Right. It makes sense. What are some of the specific threats? You touched on a couple before. You know, some of those specific threats that concern you the most, or is each event, you know, very different, you know, based on a number of variables? What's your experience with that?
My experience is the latter part of your statement, in that, you know, we have to understand the demographics, the folks that are coming out to a particular show, and understanding, you know, crowd control and looking for or looking to responsibly monitor social media prior to an event, So I think if we're proactive in, you know, sharing information, lessons learned, best practices, understanding particular types of challenges based upon the demographics of the crowd that are coming out to the venue, stadium, arena, I think as a security leader in the space, you place yourself and certainly the organization in a position of strength to, you know, best protect that space.
Sure. Can you talk for a few minutes with regards to, you know, what a risk assessment for these venues might consist of? Obviously, again, like you mentioned, each location may vary, but, you know, are there some common things that you do in terms of that risk assessment process?
You know, again, another terrific question. We want to take a look at, obviously, spacing and preventing choke points on the ingress during screening measures. So we certainly want to have multiple ways to get in the venue and multiple ways to get out of the venue, but have that space controlled responsibly. So certainly from command centers, we want to be able to utilize CC television from the inside out and certainly from the outside in. We want to have law enforcement and security monitoring exterior parking lots. So a risk assessment could be obviously looking for potential choke points where we're having large groups of people densely populated. We're seeing out of Manchester, you know, as the suicide bomber detonated the explosive, we had mass casualties and certainly a stampede, kind of a chaotic moment or a series of moments, you know, leaving the venue. So we have to study these, learn from these, increase our level of training without a fear-based model, but, you know, getting everybody on the same page and doing walkthroughs, computer simulations, dry runs, you know, fire drills. These are all part of the risk assessment for stadiums, venues, arenas, again, within those confined spaces.
I guess, and this is, you know, this is not something that I had scripted for, but I'm just, as I'm thinking out loud here, do many organizations, I guess two parts of this really, is there a standard process for that in terms of that risk assessment, and are stadiums, venues, or these organizers, are they open to, you know, conducting these on a regular basis?
You know, again, another terrific question. I hope they are. I hope they avail themselves of consultants, of, you know, resources available to them, whether that's the Joint Terrorism Task Force, certainly the cohesive relationship between the public and private sectors in terms of effective communications. But, you know, risk assessments should be done continuously. Training should be done continuously. And there's really one shoe does not fit all sizes, so to speak. We have to kind of look at security from a holistic standpoint, because the challenges come at venue security directors from multiple angles. You know, again, it's an A through Z laundry list. Certainly, we thought the advent of the Boston Marathon bombing kind of would have been the way we would have proceeded forward. But, you know, looking at Las Vegas now, we kind of have to rethink and revisit the conversation of how we can potentially protect challenges within that space.
Yeah, and I guess in a follow-on to that is, you know, ultimately, if something does happen, how will we respond and manage, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, the response is key. And I think that's where the drills come in. And certainly, you know, basically muscle memory, but what we do in a drill is what we're going to do in a real life situation. But I think getting the fans to buy into the mantra of seeing something, saying something, sharing information, Understanding what their responsibilities are prior to coming out to the venue, again, places everybody in a very good position moving forward.
Yeah. And it seems like, you know, these large events have tremendous amounts, some of them anyway. I remember years ago going out to Coachella out in California there, and just, the amount of volunteers is just immense. You know, what are some of the challenges around, you know, making sure those volunteers are prepared as well? Because, you know, surely that workforce is not there all the time. They just come on the day, or, how, what are those challenges and how do those volunteer groups get up to speed?
Again, another excellent question. Volunteer groups, you know, we want to make sure that they're properly vetted, that they'll have certain, you know, access to certain areas, and some of which are restricted, but maybe non-restrictive, but getting those folks to speak the same language with the security staff, guest services staff that work the venue full-time. I think that's the challenge between volunteers, part-time staff, and full-time staff, again, based on the demographics of the performer that's coming to the venue. In case in point, one night you may have a hockey event, which is one demographic. Two nights later, you may have a circus, which is a completely different type of demographic, followed by a heavy metal concert. So if you're the following night. So if you're, you know, looking at dealing with potential challenges, understanding who's coming after the venue, and having your volunteer staff, once properly vetted, to understand the potential challenges based on each of those three demographics, as an example.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, just as you're mentioning those different types of concerts as well, obviously, you know, makes me think about those different types of groups that come in, and you're exactly right. So you may have over that those 3 days, three totally different types of challenges, right?
Absolutely, and I'll give you an example. When I helped open the Barclays Center in 2012 with AEG, you know, we had Jay-Z and Beyonce for 8 straight shows. Barbara Streisand came in shortly thereafter. We went to college basketball, and it was, you know, professional boxing. But then we looked at a group called Sensation, which is a high ecstasy crowd. So understanding that potentially we could have, you know, patrons coming into a venue, you know, where they could be dehydrated from some type of drug usage prior to coming to a venue. So case in point, the first night, I think we had something like 36 cases of EMS for dehydration. So we set up water stations around the Barclays Center. And that placed us in a great position because the following night with the same crowd for ecstasy, we reduced it to 18 cases of dehydration. So understanding who's coming out, the potential challenges, and preparing the venue to meet those challenges, again, places everybody in a very good position moving forward.
Yeah, that leads me, you know, preparing the venue onto the, you know, relationships that the venue should have with the external, you know, stakeholders such as, you know, the local first responders. Because, again, you know, ultimately, if something does happen, you know, you want to have a good relationship with those. You just talk about the importance of those relationships for the next few minutes, please.
They certainly cannot be underscored. And law enforcement, in many cases, are contracted to work particular venues. But, you know, get any officers to come out, do a walkthrough with the general manager, director of security, director of event services. You know, obviously, walking around the venue, understanding and knowing where the exit signs are, meeting the game day staff. So the part-time and full-time staff know exactly who, you know, the key players are. But having that effective communications between the public and private sector, and certainly out of Las Vegas now, we're seeing it's not only the inner perimeter, the physical confines of the space, but we're talking about those exterior perimeters, those entertainment zones, tourism and hospitality that exist on the outside of stadiums, venues, and arenas, and understanding those challenges. And it could be from protesting to civil unrest, knowing what to do and whether or not you're going to keep, you know, the patrons inside the venue, as an example, if there's some type of protesting literally going on outside during a particular event. So we have to look at these challenges. We have to speak the same language. We have to have those effective communications with the first responders. And a lot of that has to do with having those officers and EMS and paramedics out to the venue ahead of time, doing walkthroughs, understanding the physical attributes of the venue, and everybody understanding how to lead people to safety in times of crisis.
You know, I was just thinking as you were talking there about, you know, on the outside of the, you know, fence, so to speak, the walls of the venue. And, you know, I'm up here in New England. So, you know, I think of Patriots Park and the size of that complex beyond the stadium, right? So beyond the stadium is a whole host of, you know, venues where people can go eat, drink. And there's, there's even a theater there. The place is just, you know, seems to be, every time you go up there, there seems to be another huge, you know, block of, you know, buildings being added onto it. So, you know, there could be potentially thousands of people, you know, on the outside, when you've got, tens of thousands on the inside.
Absolutely. So we're talking about, you know, obviously a lot of people in a small space, and understanding what we need to do to manage the ebb and flow of that environment. So again, these entertainment zones, we look at the U.S. Open. If you're, you know, in Flushing Meadows inside the tennis venue, you want to look at, you know, the fans that are on the outside monitoring, you know, the high definition screens. Again, that's all part of an entertainment zone. Seeing the challenges in Europe and certainly throughout the world, and seeing what potentially domestically can happen here in the United States, we have to kind of, you know, utilize our lessons learned and share those best practices to, again, best put everybody in a good position to protect that space.
Yeah, 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 for sure. The event organizers, you know, let's say they've done everything they possibly can. They've followed best practices. They've got people up to speed, awareness, training. You know, they've done everything they possibly can, but there's an explosion. There's an attack of some kind. You know, something starts to unfold very quickly in front of them. You know, obviously, Las Vegas is the, you know, probably most recent, biggest one that we can talk about here, certainly in the States. Can you talk just for a few minutes about the response phase and the importance of that, and what potentially Las Vegas could have taught us? I know there's still a lot of unfolding details, but can you just talk for a few minutes about that?
Well, certainly Las Vegas is a fluid situation. We're learning more and more, but the FBI has exhausted over 1,000 leads, and the shooter didn't fit the stereotypical profile of an active shooter. So, you know, someone who's potentially disenfranchised, who wasn't on anyone's or was not disenfranchised, wasn't on anyone's radar screen. We utilize all those resources, as you just mentioned, but, you know, we have to kind of revisit the conversation. Who would have ever thought we would have had an aerial assault, you know, from a sniper, if you will? You know, we've been focusing so much on errant drones, but, you know, understanding that hospitality and tourism also have a vested interest in, you know, being aware of who's checking into those spaces and how close that is in proximity to any type of conflict that may take place in the immediate area.
Sure, sure. You know, here at PreparedX, we do, you know, probably, you know, a lot of our business is 80-90% is crisis simulation exercises, tabletop exercises for businesses. And so we always, you know, like to, you know, ask the people that we interview about exercises and the importance of that. So for an event organizer, you know, do they often do drills and exercises when they're preparing for events? What's your experience with that with regards to venues and other types of, you know, concerts and those types of organizers?
I feel they have done it, but certainly post-Las Vegas, I think the need to do it more consistently is certainly paramount, based on the numerous challenges that we're seeing. So, you know, using metrics to measure the aptitude and learning of staff and knowing, you know, how to evacuate and getting the fans to buy into that mantra, again, of being part of the experience. I think consistent training, ongoing, measuring, you know, metrically, you know, how staff is reacting. You know, again, what you do in practice is what you're pretty much going to do in a real life situation. But we have to kind of take a look at post Las Vegas, how we're going to best safeguard, you know, these numerous challenges. So if you look at Jason Aldean, he was able to get off the stage. Members of his staff went underneath the stage and they essentially sheltered in place. But unfortunately, a lot of the fans really had nowhere to go. Sure. Because they were in open space inside a confined area. So we have to kind of look at, you know, again, how best we can protect those types of spaces, you know, moving forward. So our challenges continue. And the frequency and the accuracy and certainly the proactive situational awareness mindset for event security staff, again, cannot be underscored. We have to do this consistently and on a regular basis.
Sure, sure. Well, this has been very timely for sure, and another, you know, excellent show today. And I just want to thank you for, you know, spending some time with us, James. Just before we do wrap up, is there any final comments that you have? And also, for our listeners, how can they get a hold of you if they want to contact you?
Absolutely, Rob. Again, thank you for the opportunity to have a timely and cause and effect conversation. You know, unfortunately, we don't have these conversations, right, unless something really bad happens. Right. So if we can look at the asset protection discipline as something that needs to be more proactive as opposed to reactionary nature, again, it's all about the fan experience. We want the fans to come out time and time again. We don't want to be overzealous and create a police state, but at the same time, if the fans can avail themselves of codes of conduct, of what's expected, certainly we want them to get into the venue safely, to adhere to the rules, but also to share information if something looks out of the ordinary to them. You know, again, I've been really focusing on not so much a fear-based model, but one that's more about empowerment, Rob. It's getting fans to patrons to understand their role. And then again, if they see something that does not look right to them, to share that, you know, as quickly as possible with somebody working in the space. So again, my name is James A. DeMeo. Just honored to have this conversation. You know, I always tell people, Rob, that we don't bat 1,000%, unfortunately, but if we can do everything we can, utilizing technology, responsible social media monitoring, proactive risk mitigation events, staff training, fusion centers, JTTF, getting the fans to be situationally aware of what's going on that, around them. You know, again, we want to enjoy our lives. We don't want to not go out to concerts or venues because of fear, because that is definitely the mindset of terrorism. And these are our everyday freedoms that we want to live and enjoy, you know, all these wonderful things around us. So, you know, moving forward, again, we have the conversation, we do the research, we share information, we get fans to buy into the mantra that we're all in this together. The employees don't work in silos. They're team leaders. They share information. I think we come out on a very, very good positive note moving forward.
Excellent. Thanks again. And we'll add your contact information into this podcast post, and we'll get that out to the network, as well as obviously send you a link once it's up and running. Again, appreciate the time today.
Thank you, sir. Enjoy your day.
Yeah, take care. Bye. That's it for episode 41 of the PreparedX podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast and found the information informative, please share it with your audience. And don't forget to rate us on iTunes. That's really important. And obviously, there are other distribution channels. Please rate us on those channels too. Until next time, have a nice day.